When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Forever Dog.
This week on the podcast, Sylvia Moreno Garcia's Silver Nitrate. Hello, welcome to Teen Creeps, the podcast that discusses YA pulp fiction. I'm one of your hosts, Lindsay Kaytai.
I'm another one of your hosts, Kelly Nugent.
And today we are talking about another Sylvia Moreno Garcia book. This one is Silver Nitrate.
Nazi occultism. Mm-hmm. Mexican horror movies. There
a lot of love.
Childhood love. And there were some I thought that the characterization of this childhood love was really interesting and unique. And I did like both of these characters. I liked Montserrat and Tristan.
I loved them. Yeah.
Yeah. They were great. And this is the first time that we're like, it's split between these two leads.
Yeah. Two different. Yeah. Protagonists. Yeah.
Which I like. And I don't mean this in a negative way. I do like when there's a romance and then we get to see both sides and it's kind of like, oh, well, you know what?
Stop playing around, you guys.
Stop playing around. Cause we know it's not unrequited. It's just
entirely.
It's just very, very full of denial.
Yes. And I mean, he is, because it's Montserrat knows that she loves him and Tristan is in denial. It's because he's superficial.
Yes.
But he's grown up a lot.
He grows up a lot in this. And then I have screenshots of like, he is also like aware that he is not a good person.
Yeah, I really do like him a lot.
Me too. I liked both of them a lot, and I wanted the best for them. I feel like her other books feel so fleshed out and lived in, and this one, I didn't feel like negatively about. Like I wasn't like angry reading the book.
No, but I loved the story. It was just it felt a little not rushed exactly. It's like the writing felt rushed, but the story didn't feel rushed. It felt and it sort of felt like, honestly, it was more like the editor was checked out.
Yeah,
because there was a lot of repetition of information.
Yeah, and also even like words, like the same words line after line.
Verbatim phrases. And particularly in a scene between three of the characters, between Tristan, Montserrat, and Jose, when Jose kept having to repeat that, that he was not a ghost, he was like living, not Jose, but the Wilhelm. What is his last name? Ewers?
Jose was saying that Ewers was not a ghost.
He was saying that Ewers wasn't a ghost, he was just like between realms. He had to say that to Tristan like 4 or 5 times.
I
was like, Tristan, I'm going to jump in the book and tell you that he's not a ghost in a second. Please get it through your skull. And that shouldn't, it's like, I understand that people might do that in real life, but it makes reading a book a little tedious.
Do it twice.
Yeah.
Do it twice to show that he's like not listening because he's so freaked out or whatever. Yeah. He's in denial. That's fine.
But it was like so many times.
It was
times,
a lot
as
of
if
times.
She thought the reader was going to forget or something. It was just, it was not too many times. It was too much repetition of lore.
Yeah.
Too much repetition of Ewers' biography.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We got all of the biography, and then we got Montserrat thinking of the biography, and then we got Montserrat telling other people about the biography. I was just like, we know.
Yeah, and then we got the information about the biography, like, in 8 different ways. Like, we got it from the secret book. We got it from Jose. We got it from, who's the director? Ureta.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it was just like over and over again. So there was a lot of fat to the book.
Well, and like usually in her books, I'm so invested about like what's going to happen. I think that because there was so much just information dumping happening, it was taking me out a lot. Because if you pitched this story to me, it's amazing. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
it's so up our alley.
Yes. It's like, okay, this like fucked up like Nazi occultist pairs with a horror director
in the 50s
to make a movie on silver nitrate, because he believed that ritual, when experienced by others, like how Aleister Crowley's play was like ritual magic. But if amplified to many, many viewers and like perpetuated through silver nitrate film and sound and dubbing over the sound to make like a closed loop, creates like a very powerful spell that it never gets finished.
Yeah, I think this is chaos magic, right?
Yeah, because there's a lot of references to a lot of different types of magic. There's chaos magic through Aleister Crowley. There's also they even mention Church of Satan founder.
I mean, she taught.
There's so much dumping of
info dump, page after page of info dump.
Anton LaVey, which like, and that was the thing too. It's that like, I feel like it is true that if you are going to go into something that does have a lot of the subject matter itself is very esoteric, right? And I don't know if you've ever tried to read any of like Aleister Crowley's documents or Anton LaVey's documents. It is all very I know I just said esoteric, but it's just very like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Well, it's the writing is a little impenetrable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I understand that there's like a ton of information that she wants to get forth, because it's like,
but like, she can get the information forth without being a course in
it. It felt like a course.
A master
class. Like, so you want to know about chaos magic?
Yeah, but like, so much of the background was just that. It was background. And it was like, it had a little bit of that. And I mean, Marino Garcia is like a Lovecraft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did feel a little scholar. Yeah.
But it had that old style of like, I'm working harder than I need to try to like convince you this is real. And it's like, I'm on board for this to be real within the story. Like, I'm not somebody in like 1850 who you need to like convince. Like, I'm great. They're magic. I got it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it felt like she was overselling all of the ideas.
And I think you can, yeah, and I think you can, like, how do I put it? Like, you can still be like, you know, oh, from the Church of Satan or from Aleister Crowley's works, whatever, without then giving us all the backstory on, like, Aleister Crowley's work. Like, I just felt
And multiple times.
Yeah, multiple times.
That's what was weird is I am interested, like, yeah, give me... I'm interested in the subject. It's not that. It's that it was like taking up so much page space and not that much was happening in the story.
Yeah.
It was like we would take long, long breaks while Montserrat like schooled herself in magic.
Yeah. Well, because most of the stuff that we learn is literally from her reading. So it's like she read about this and this and this and this. And then, or it's Abel Ureta like just telling them things. And I know that books are different than screenplays, you know, like, but I just kept imagining them all three sitting at a table while one guy's just talking.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, exactly. Oh my God.
Good boy.
Yeah, I don't know. I think.
And it was just like so much of that because it was like, yeah, we were getting it from Abel. Then we're getting it from a book. Then we're getting Montserrat telling Tristan about it. Then we're getting it
and then
from
Jose.
Then we're getting it from Clermont.
Oh my
then
God.
We're getting it from Marissa. Then we're getting it from Alma. Then we're, who is Marissa? And it was just like over and over and over and over and over and over and over.
I think the thing is that this is a very challenging, it is quite a challenging endeavor to be like, this is the story I want to tell, and how can I do that very succinctly? It's funny that this is about an editor.
That's the thing. It feels like it. Yeah. Montserrat is a sound editor. It feels like this book was kind of lacking
an editor,
heavier touch of an editor.
Yeah.
But that said, I still think it was like a solid book.
Yeah, me too.
We both love this story.
Yeah. I really love this story, and I think it was like, I think I wouldn't have had the complaints I had if the like, if the other stuff, like if the way that we got that background information was a little bit less repetitive and more interestingly conveyed. And I know that's
or just
vague.
Conveyed less frequently.
Well, because also
was truly
I
like,
just
we got it. I get
but
it.
But I think I would have still had the problem if the way we were getting all that information was from Abel telling them. Like, I just them sitting at a table and then info dump all at once. Cause I was reading and I was like, damn, this is like page after page of just us listening to Abel talk, which
I was okay with it by that point. So like for me, I was still engaged.
I was absorbing the information and like, mm-hmm. I wasn't checked out, but I was like, man, like I did have the thought, man,
yeah,
this is a lot
just,
of him
she needed
talking.
To break it up. So it need a li- yeah. So instead of like getting the entire story from every single character over.
Yeah,
over
we could
again,
get piece by
yes,
piece. Yeah.
Exactly. Get pieces of it as you go along. Like cuz it had a noir feel.
Yes, it but definitely had a noir feel.
Unlike a noir, it wasn't like, "Oh, and now I've gotten a little bit more of the mystery. A little bit more has been mm-hmm. revealed." It was like, yeah, I knew this like 20 minutes ago already. And
because I'm literally being told the characters again. Told me. But also, the second we met the niece of the silent movie star, I was like, it's her. It's her.
Yep.
It's her. let me read the.
Yeah, go for it.
The thing. Montserrat has always been overlooked. She's a talented sound editor, but she's left out of the boys' club running the film industry in 90s Mexico City. And she's all but invisible to her best friend, Tristan, a charming if faded soap opera star, though she's been in love with him since childhood. Then Tristan discovers his new neighbors, the cult horror director Abel Urreta, and the legendary auteur claims he can change their lives, even if his tale of a Nazi occultist imbuing magic into highly volatile silver nitrate stock sounds like sheer fantasy. The magic film was never finished, which is why Urreta swears his career vanished overnight. He is cursed. Now the director wants Montserrat and Tristan to help him shoot the missing scene and lift the curse, but Montserrat soon notices a dark presence following her, and Tristan begins seeing the ghost of his ex-girlfriend. As they work together to unravel the mystery of the film and the obscure occultist who once roamed their city, Montserrat and Tristan may find that sorcerers and magic are not only the stuff of movies.
Like, that just sounds so cool.
Yeah.
The movies are back, baby, and if you're looking for a weekly podcast to keep up with all the new releases and all the hottest news and rumors coming out of Hollywood, check out Movies, Baby, with 5 Ys. Is Emma Stone on track for greatest actress of all time?
What's the best Godzilla movie of all?
What's up with John Cena?
Love Lies Bleeding? We'll take more where that came from.
What movie should have won Best Picture at this year's Oscars?
In. The name of 2 months, and they ain't close together.
Those are just some of the topics we've discussed on recent episodes of Movies Baby. Every week on Movies Baby, Forever Dog co-founders and lifelong movie fanatics Brett and Joe break down the hottest movie news, review the latest releases, shout out forgotten classics, and prophesy the future of Hollywood. You can listen to Movies Baby wherever you get podcasts, and you can watch Movies Baby live every Thursday night on YouTube at Movies Baby with 5 Y's. Movies Baby!
The other thing, too, is that when I, because I've read the back of this book before, because this book has been on my list for a while. And the idea of shooting the missing scene versus dubbing the missing scene, that also feel that, like, I think, I know she's a sound editor and dubbing it, but I think it's like way cooler and creepier for them to be shooting a missing scene, but that's neither here.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It just would be a little bit more active.
That was exactly the word I was about to use.
Yeah. However, whatever. That's very minor, right? Like, mm-hmm. I still thought it was interesting them dubbing it, but also we see them watch it. And then we jump to it's over and done.
I was gonna say, like, it is to your point about like shooting it would have been more active. I was like, I kind of missed that they'd even done it.
Yeah. I know.
It, like, I kind of, maybe it's because I was like starting to, like, the repetition of information was getting to me, and I, like, I thought maybe I skipped over it somehow, like, in my, like,
no, it literally jumps. I turned back in pages because I was like, wait, yeah. So did they do it? And they did, but it literally just jumps. Like, they watch it before on the silver nitrate stock. And they're like, oh my God, it is so beautiful. Which this also made me really want to see a movie on silver nitrate stock. I was like, I got it.
I did too. Yeah.
Get some eyes on.
This sounds amazing.
There's only like, I think we have one or two places in Los Angeles that can do it. But otherwise.
That's cool to even know that we do.
Yeah. I was asking Lucas if he had seen some, and he saw them in a museum. He saw one in a museum in like England or something, in London probably. But I was like, I'd love to see this.
Yeah.
Even though it's scary.
I want to see those dark darks and those
just those white luminescent
in the, yeah.
Yeah. And then just like the depth too. Like I'd love to see that. But yeah, so I also really felt for Montserrat. The characterization of the characters is great. I fully got who these people were.
Yeah.
And
that was something I'm never bored by.
No.
Like, more, like, character background.
She's so good at writing characters.
Her and like, Stephen King. She, like, has that Stephen King, like, I can't help but completely, like,
everyone.
Give an entire biography for every character.
But it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, Montserrat is like, so she's in this like boys club, basically trying to do sound editing. And she's just getting shut out of jobs. They're bringing on this like young guy. And it's this classic thing of like, I feel alienated because everyone alienates me. So I'm not going to engage with them. And then they're going to get mad at me for not engaging with them.
Mm-hmm.
And also I'm being mistreated all the time and I am blowing up and I shouldn't be blowing up, but I also wouldn't be blowing up if I wasn't being mistreated all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, she basically really like all these characters are like in the perfect place to agree to do a weird occultist thing with Adoretta or Udoretta. And also because they kind of just think, well, let's just help this guy. Because he's kind of sad.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought Tristan's story was like so interesting. How basically he became an actor, partly because he was like, I'll be able to belong on screen where everything is easy. But also like, yeah, I want eyes on me. I like being paid attention to.
Beautiful.
He's very beautiful. But he got in a car accident with his girlfriend. His girlfriend was driving the car. This was 10 years ago. Karina, this Nepo baby, soap opera star that was his opposite in the show that he was in. She was a party girl. He hadn't yet become a party boy like that. She was really drunk. She was driving. She died. He got disfigured in his face. There's like the surgery afterwards was like pretty successful, but one of his eyes now is a little smaller. He has a scar on his face. And also he was like completely smeared by the tabloids and kind of disappeared by her, by Karina's father, who's like a bigwig in the industry.
And he's bisexual. And so it was like implied that he was like a deviant who was corrupting her. And her dad helped plant that story.
Yeah, that he threw these like drug orgies and but really it was that she was a party girl and that's what he liked about her. And so then after that, he like became pretty addicted to drugs and alcohol and tried to kill himself once and only ever to Montserrat, only ever reached out like in her eyes, only ever reached out to his childhood best friend Montserrat when he's in between relationships and he needs someone to feel comfortable with. I have this quote that I screenshotted. Part of their unspoken agreement, he thought, was that Montserrat must always remain the same. She must be a constant in his life, his true north. There was a monstrous selfishness to this attitude. He understood this the same way he realized he was sometimes annoyingly childish in his demands and affection. But it was the only way he truly knew how to love someone. I thought that was
It's nice.
Really good.
I thought it was funny, like, his confession at the end to her of, like, what really happened was, like, very anticlimactic.
Yeah.
Like, that was a moment where I was like, were we supposed to feel like this was a confession? Because, like he had already told us that, but, like, we were in his head.
Mm-hmm.
And so we basically already had all that information except for the part about how, like, he was wanting to, like, fully break up with her.
Mm-hmm.
But he confesses that to Montserrat and she's like, yeah, I basically guessed that. And I was like, yeah, me too. Like, I feel like there should have been an actual like reveal in that moment. It would have been stronger.
Well, I guess like, the reveal was because we knew that he pretended to be asleep, right? Did we already know that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we already knew that. The only thing we knew was that he wanted to get her to break up with him. Like, he was doing that thing where he was, like, sabotaging the relationship so that the other person would break up because he doesn't want to break up.
Yeah.
Which some people love to do that.
He doesn't want the guilt of breaking up with someone, so he just, like, waits until they do it.
Mm-hmm.
He just withdraws.
Mm-hmm. And so he was hoping that that would happen that night, but instead she died.
Yep. But it just didn't – I was like – we're not getting anything new here.
No.
And so this moment doesn't feel like as strong as it could be.
Yeah. 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 I don't know.
And then also like his goodbye to Karina, because he, in dubbing this film for Abel Urueta, I'm sure I'm saying that badly.
Urueta.
They restart this spell that he was intending. His intention with this spell was, it was like, so six runes were to be shown in the credits, six runes to be shown in the end credits, and then three scenes throughout that seem like confusing, weird, campy horror scenes, but are actually like the words of a spell performed by himself, Abel, and Claremont. And or was it Jose? No, it must have been Abel. Or maybe I forget.
No, it was Abel. It was Abel, not Jose. Jose was not in it. He just wrote it.
Okay, that's what I thought. And then the spell was intended to, he would then kill himself, and showing that movie would bring him back to life, but healthy, because he has like health issues. And he was gonna, he had a vision that he would die young.
Mm-hmm.
But before they could record sound for the scene, the final scene, he was killed in supposed mugging. But it was actually the work of Alma, an aging movie star at the time who was taking her revenge on Ewers because he told her that the spell was to restore her youth. Jose, his co-writer, told her that Ewers lied, that it was all for him. So she arranged for his death and took all of the film stock for herself and has been like siphoning the magic contained within the reels to keep herself from aging any further. And is now like posing as her cousin
or her niece.
Her niece. Niece Marissa. Marissa. And now Abel has convinced Montserrat and Tristan to dub over it, to start it over, because he thinks his career was cursed when it couldn't get finished. Like, not performing the spell sort of cast a residual bad magic on everybody involved. Like, people died, people's careers were over. Just random little things happened to a bunch of people who
classic
all worked on the
cursed film.
Yeah. So they do so, and then Abel is immediately contacted about a theater doing a retrospective on his work. Tristan immediately gets called in to read for the lead on a soap, and Montserrat's sister, Araceli, is that her name? She has cancer, and suddenly her tumor has shrunk, and the doctors are telling her she's going to be fine.
Yeah, she's in remission.
But then Tristan is seeing the ghost of Karina, and Abel is having a vision that he's going to be murdered. Because in doing the spell, like, it unlocked latent abilities, which Abel used to have access to. He always used to have, like, clairvoyance when working with Ewers. He used to, like, bet on the ponies, but then lost the ability after Ewers died. And then so it awakened necromancy within
Tristan.
And it just sort of awakened a general power within Montserrat.
There was another thing too that I wanted either wrapped up or explained. So there's like each of the elements are associated with a different type of magic. So water is associated with necromancy. Air is like the final element that's requires mastery of all the other elements, and it's like kind of elusive. Ground is, I don't remember. One is clear. I think fire.
She has fire.
She has fire.
She's like drawn to fire.
Mm-hmm. And clairvoyancy, I think, is ground. I'm not sure, but. So the water is necromancy, right? So he keeps noticing that, like, his taps are on all the time, even though he keeps turning them off.
Mm-hmm.
And then every time the taps are on, like, he sees the ghost of his dead girlfriend, Karina. But to me, I'm like, I wanted an explanation of how the taps were turning on. Was he turning them on? Was he, like, was his power of water...
Maybe, like, he was calling water to himself
unconsciously.
Yeah.
And that's how the.
Maybe.
Yeah. Or is it like that's how Ewers was haunting him or what? Like, it to me, that was not clear because I was like, so who's doing the water? How's the water happening?
I don't know. I thought maybe it was Karina doing it.
But then
it seemed like Karina was truly just like a vision and like couldn't really affect anything.
Also, it's like mastery of water creates mastery of necromancy. So I was like, okay, so then that means you need the water to, like, you know, you need to be like using water to access necromancy. So it wouldn't, at least to me, that's cart in front of the horse if she's doing the water because she comes because of the water.
Maybe it's just like they come together. So like,
so it's just like they both of them happen.
They both like in bursts of power, like
it's correlation, not causation.
Maybe. But yeah.
But I would have liked that answered.
Yeah. She answers so many other things.
So many other things so many times.
To the point where I started to tune out and then I didn't retain as much.
Yeah.
Which is not great.
I already had some base knowledge about, like, Anton LaVey and Aleister Crowley stuff just from having...
Yeah, I have a little bit, but I don't think as much as you.
gotten it. Well, but again, this is the other thing about like chaos magic and like Church of Satan and all of that stuff, and not necessarily Church of Satan now as it stands, but like the origins and like Anton LaVey's writings and stuff. I could probably read or listen to or absorb information about those things 700,000 times, and I would not, like, I still am just like, I don't really know, because I lack the, I think it's that I'm interested in it vaguely, like as a topic. I'm like, oh, interesting, like whatever. But then the structure of the readings are so horrible that I'm like, I can't push myself to study this because my desire to understand it is not great enough.
Mm.
It's too impenetrable for me personally, because I will read it and I'll be like, okay. And then maybe a month goes by and it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very interested in the theory of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the information is, it can be a little, keep you at arm's length.
Yeah. And I think purposely so, right? Like, it's like Aleister Crowley kind of thought a bit about himself. So he was like, every word I write, you know, he thought a bit about himself. So he was like, you know, I need to write this in the most flowery way possible, and circuitous at that.
And like, it's implied in this book that that's part of the magic. Yeah. Like, that's part of the spell casting, is the flowery language.
Yeah. I liked that, that Montserrat demystifies it a little bit when she's like, okay, so like, you used runes because like they were important to you, but it's not the runes that were powerful, it's that it was meaningful to you.
Yeah, it's what you imbue the runes with.
Yeah, like intention, right? Like, and I did like that too.
I am largely familiar with this concept via Michael, via Grant Morrison. Because of Mike being a huge Grant Morrison fan, and Grant Morrison is in turn a big chaos magic Aleister Crowley person, that's how I am familiar with it. And so my knowledge of it is pretty bare bones, but I'm like, yeah, chaos magic, cool.
Yeah. Well, and also the name of it is so fucking cool. Chaos Magic.
Chaos Magic.
And that is tight.
Sexy.
Very sexy. But I did like that too, right? Of like, where she's, and that is the thing, right? With fucking Nazi white supremacist idiots. It's like, they create this like, to them, seemingly undefeatable. They're like, well, yes, obviously, Aryans are the best because of blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he's literally taking magic from people in the street that he meets that are, like, because he's hiding in fucking Mexico.
Like, oh, I guess because they're, like, descended from, like, Mayans and Aztecs, like, maybe. And because those people were, like, taught by the Atlanteans. Like, I don't understand, like... racist white people's obsession with Atlantis.
Oh my God. They love it. It
sounds so fucking goofy to me. Like, I'm descended from Atlanteans. It's like, why do you even need that to be the case? Why do you need that of all things to be, like, underwater, like this lost civilization that's now underwater? What is the draw?
Yeah.
What about Atlantis is so appealing?
I think that it's very magic sounding, right? You're like, whoa, under the water. And then it's like that it's like lost, right? So they're like, oh fuck, like this is why I like live in like a shithole and like I'm failing at work. It's because my ancestors were lost in the sea and I need to get my rightful
special.
Like, yeah, and it is this obsession with needing to be special, right? And realizing that at the core, you really are not. Because the people that believe in this kind of shit are, like, the most boring fucking people on the planet.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at this Wikipedia article about root race, which is what this has its root in.
Mm-hmm.
But says, root races are stages in human evolution in the esoteric cosmology of theosophist Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, as described in her book, The Secret
Blavatsky,
Doctrine.
Madame Blavatsky.
Blavatsky. Mm-hmm. These races existed mainly on now lost continents. Blavatsky's model was developed by later theosophists, most notably William Scott Elliot in The Story of Atlantis and The Lost Lemuria. Annie Besant further developed the model, and I just love this title. Man, whence, how, and whither?
See, that's an example. That is how the fuck this writing is. It's literally, yes. Whence, how, and whither? What?
Whither.
What?
Both Besant and Scott Elliott relied on information from Charles Webster Leadbeater obtained by astral clairvoyance. It's like, yeah, you pull this out of thin air. Blah, 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 blah. Associated with the time periods associated with these races, epochs, locations of the proposed former continents, blah, 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 earthquakes, sudden sinking of Atlantis. According to Blavatsky's writings, there are 7 root races assembling for our Earth. Each root race is divided into 7 sub-races. Like, it's just like so... It's like, why is your made-up magic so dense? Like, this is made up. You made this up.
I think it's like
they're just writing early fantasy. The writing first root race was ethereal, i.e. they were composed of etheric matter. They reproduced by dividing like an amoeba. Earth was still cooling at that time. The first mountain to arise out of the stormy primeval ocean was Mount Meru.
Mount Meru.
A.k.a. Polarian. The second root race, Hyperborean. The second root race lived in Hyperborea. The second root race was colored golden yellow. Hyperborea included what is now northern Canada, Greenland, Iceland, Scandinavia, northern Russia, and Kamchatka. The climate was tropical because Earth had not yet developed an axial tilt. The esoteric name of their continent is Plaksha. They called themselves the Kimpurshas. They reproduced by budding. It's like, this is
what are
made
we talking
up.
About?
What are you talking
about? What are you fucking
about?
Talking about?
The third root race.
Are you talking about the kingdom
Lemuria.
Of Mu?
Yeah. I'm from the kingdom of Mu, an ancient race of magnificent and noble cow folk. We're called the Muians.
Hold on. Okay, because I'm looking right now on, the impact of Mayanism on the Plato story of Atlantis and like the modern ideas of Atlantis. And so basically kind of what we were saying and what is explained in the book is that when Europeans discovered the Mayans, racist Europeans, when trying to connect the old and new world, we're like, well, these ruins could not have been made by these people. So because they must have been made by Atlanteans.
Yes, because the entire basis of their like colonizing was these are a primitive people and we're right. bringing them civilization. So they can't have already had civilization. That must have been somebody else.
Exactly.
Either aliens or a distinct race of people that now live under the sea.
A lost race of white Nordic folk who perished under the ocean.
It says that like the descendants of Atlanteans on this Wikipedia article include those of the Mongolian race, the Malayan race and the American Indian race, as what some people in the late 19th and early 20th centuries called the olive-skinned Mediterranean race. So it's like, where are the white people within this idea?
Oh my God. Okay. Well, all right. This is what I'm also finding. So there's this guy, Rasoud de Bourbourg. Okay. So he traveled through Mesoamerica in the mid-1800s. And then he was like, guess what, guys? He lost his academic credibility because of this.
Huh, I wonder why.
So he was like, the Mayan people descended from the Toltecs, which is a Toltec culture. It's a Colombian Mesoamerican culture. And then he's like, they were the surviving population of the racially superior civilization of Atlantis. And everyone's like, huh?
Yeah.
And then he's like, don't worry.
It's real. This is a real thing.
It's real.
Trust me, I got it from a trance.
So then there's this Augustus Le Plongeon. Okay, he's a pseudo-archaeologist. He goes to Mesoamerica and he starts excavating, which you know that excavation site was crazy, right? Like this guy who's not a real archaeologist who's just like digging shit up everywhere.
I found a shell and on the shell is a rune.
So he invents narratives, okay? He created the Kingdom of Mu saga.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He's saying that's Atlantis, the Kingdom mm-hmm. of Mu. And he was like, oh my God, you guys, me and my wife Alice are actually descendants of Osiris and Isis.
Oh my God.
Crazy. Isn't this crazy?
That's so crazy, but also very real.
And then he's like, also Heinrich Schliemann,
mm-hmm.
okay, who is a German businessman and pioneer in the field of archaeology. He had just discovered the ancient city of Troy.
As you do.
from Homer's epic poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, we're connected to Heinrich Schliemann, which I feel like that Heinrich guy is like, please don't include me.
I don't know.
Do you think he liked it? Or do you think?
I need to know more about Heinrich.
I'm looking at Heinrich right now. Okay, so Heinrich, I mean, he was a real archaeologist, I'm seeing. He was really into, so he was the archaeological excavator of the site of Troy.
Okay. So a real actual scholar.
Yes. He, let's see, career. Yeah, he was pretty, yeah, he also was like a linguist and a businessman. He became a U.S. citizen. I'm just skimming. This isn't necessarily information that's... I mean, I think he's probably a bad person because he was a military contractor in the Crimean War.
Yeah, probably.
And cornered the markets in indigo, saltpeter, sulfur, lead, constituents of ammunition, and then he resold those to the Russian government. At 36, he retired because he was wealthy enough to.
Sure.
And then he was like, from that point on, I wanted to pursue finding Troy. Okay, he was an amateur archaeologist, but I think with all of his money, he was able to, like, find Troy.
I found it.
I found it. Fuck, you guys. Fuck.
You found it.
Come over here. Guys, this is fucking crazy.
You guys, it's Troy.
It's Troy.
Troy.
Shit. Oh, my God. You guys. Okay, the site. Yeah, I guess he found it. Oh, at first he was skeptical. He was like, I don't know. I don't know if this is. And then this other guy, Calvert.
Hard to say.
This Frank Calvert guy, who was also an English amateur archaeologist and local expert. He was like, no, babes, this is Troy. And he was like, this is crazy.
Oh my God.
But let's keep digging. So they kept digging and then they found 9 buried cities.
Okay.
Man, how easy is life back then? I found 9 cities. What the fuck?
I found 9 cities today.
Yep. Oh, yeah. He found the Mask of Agamemnon. Really? Oh, my God. How do we know this shit's real?
I don't know. I just, like... you'd probably, like, you don't? Unless a bunch of people confirmed this.
I don't know. I mean, I guess now you can do, like, carbon dating on shit.
But it seemed like a lot of people were just like, I found this. And then they would just, like, tour on it. Make a bunch of money.
Yeah. Like, well, also, he had so much money before.
Mm-hmm.
Because he cornered the market on so many things. Okay, anyway, so this guy was like, we're connected to Heinrich Schliemann. And then... he also believed he'd found connections between the Greek and Mayan languages, which produced a narrative of the destruction of Atlantis.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. And
whatever
then down
you say, pal.
And then we have Blavatsky, which is the thing that you were. her fucking shit that she was up to. Yep. And then Nazism.
And then Nazis.
Mm hmm.
Yeah. I liked reading about the him. Like, like Nazis trying to get them to use pendulums to tell them where British warships were. Like that all seemed fun.
I liked
the story of this book. It was just like it really could have been tightened up.
Yeah. Yeah. I also liked that, like, I did like that this guy kind of created his own myth of like who he was, Ewers. Mm-hmm. When he was like, oh yeah, like actually I was like not a Nazi, but also I did do some Nazi things. But actually I was here when there was like Nazi stuff happening. But also I did
actually like, I fled, but I am better than all of you.
I know. But also like I also liked too that like he like they Montserrat and Tristan point out, like they're like, okay, but you're all light skin. You know that, right? Like, you're all light skin, light mm-hmm. eyes. And the only reason that he kept you around was because you made him feel powerful. And, like, he was just definitely using you. And he told you that you were special or that he could make you special, right? Like, that's what happened. And
he's like, yes.
Udreda's like, yeah.
And Jose, like, yeah, I knew. He was racist. Everybody's yeah. like, okay. And he's like, but he was interesting. Everybody just keeps saying that. Yes. Was he a terrible person? Yes. But he was so magnetic.
Powerful.
Even Montserrat.
Just say he had a big schlong. Just get it over with. Just say he had a big swanging thing.
Swanging thing. Kelly, where do you get these things?
I don't know. I have really bad heartburn right now, so I think it's making me crazy. I ate a Pepcid, but it is still boiling. But you know why? Because I had coffee, half of a protein bar, and then tomato soup. And I think
something's I'm in much the same situation
inside of me where there's a lot of acid.
Yes, yes, yes.
And it's really hurting. And I need to eat just like some bread or something and just have it soak it up. This was the other thing. In the other books, whenever the main character feels this like scary magnetic pull to a scary guy,
mm-hmm.
I always felt it.
Yeah.
But with this, I was like, I don't know. I guess. Yeah, he's like barely around.
Yeah. It was a lot of being told that he was magnetic and not me feeling it.
Not at all. He was and barely was there.
Like, oh, it was when she thought it was Tristan curled up against her in bed. And it was like yours. That was a fun scene.
Ooh, yeah,
and I really liked the scene with the like dogs.
Oh yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah, there's a scene where like these dogs are conjured and they're like sort of like almost like they're painted in our reality. It was very cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I liked too, because at first I was like, okay, so you mean to tell me that this kind of shit's happening all the time, we're not seeing it. But Jose's like, no, this does not ever fucking happen.
Yeah,
that means yours guys is fault. And you fucked something up. Mm-hmm. So I did appreciate that. I liked that when how scary that moment was when, so she sleeps in the bed next to Tristan one night because he's crashing at her house. And she wakes up in the middle of the night and he has his like arm around her and she's like, what the fuck? But also she's like, oh my God, cause I love Tristan and like, this is crazy. Mm-hmm. But then she like tries to push him off her and he pulls her even tighter. And she's like, what the fuck? And then he whispers in her ear, follow me into the dark. And she's like, I know his fucking voice. That is not Tristan.
Mm-hmm.
And then she like turns around and he's gone. And Tristan's just sleeping facing the other way. The mm-hmm. little mountain of pillows between them.
Yeah. Not close to her at all.
Scary. Creepy. Yeah, so that part was cool. And the dogs were really, really cool. But yeah, so they basically, after they do the spell, like we were saying, like they get awakened, like their magic gets awakened. And they realize that things are a little bit more complicated than they thought. Because it isn't just Urueta and them making this old film. Because there's other people with... Because I did like the tease of, like, you know, there's other people involved in this, right? Like, You know, like I liked the like, oh, but there's these two girls and this guy that we are just not talking about, I guess. But surprise, surprise, they do come into play.
Yeah, that's the like noir aspect of the story. Where yeah. It's like now they have to go meet these like other goofy characters.
Yeah. In their houses, which is such a noir thing. Come into my mansion.
In their houses. In their mansions.
In their mansions. So they go and meet the silent movie star's quote niece.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, my aunt told me all these crazy stories and I'm going to tell them to you as if basically they happened to me. But like, remember, it's happened to my aunt, not me.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this is definitely you or her. And you're the reason you want all this film and you took all this stuff is because like you're staying young, but whatever. And basically she's not that dangerous because the only thing she wants is to stay young. Whereas like the other girl, what was her name?
Claremont.
Yeah, Claremont.
Who's just been like working at building up his cult for when he returns. And he was also descended from like German.
Yeah. Nazi stock. Shit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So she has this whole cult where her goal is to do like the ultimate blood sacrifice to get Ewers back forever. Because Ewers' plan was to kill himself. Did we talk about this already?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was killed sick. By Alma, that basically, even though they couldn't complete the spell, that ended up being the blood sacrifice. And so it was just waiting for sound.
Mm-hmm.
And they restarted it. And now he's like, the more power they get, the more power he gets. He's feeding off of it. He needs followers to...
He's
get
cusping.
Back to the world. Yeah, he's cusping.
He's right there.
And they go, they're like kidnapped and brought to Claremont's house where all of his followers are. And she's thrown into a liminal space where he exists. And he's like, it's very labyrinth. David Bowie, just let me rule you and I will...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Give you everything you want. Mm-hmm. And she says, okay, I'll follow you into the dark or into the night.
And she did what we said.
Yep. Play along.
She's like, oh my God,
I would absolutely love to worship you. Thank you. Even though everything I've said up to now makes it very clear you have no intention of doing so. But you're so wrapped up in your own ego that you're not hearing that.
Because you're so used to everyone saying yes. So I'll just do that too.
Yeah. You think and you're so like, irresistible great. That you are about to buy this very obvious lie.
Well, also he cannot possibly believe that she is good at magic.
Yep. Because she's not Aryan.
Because she's not Aryan.
And
but she is good at magic.
And because he can't imagine that she doesn't want to like change all the things he's offered.
Like, yeah.
Healing her leg because she has a disability with her leg.
She had to have a bunch of Tristan. Surgeries on it. Yeah.
And then so she's thrown back into the real world, and instead of doing the final rune, his rune, which is called like the Vigsevir.
Yeah. Something like that.
She does her fire rune that she did at Clarabon's house before to get her off their back. Whole place goes up in flames, and then she's like fighting.
Also, this is while they're projecting the silver nitrate film. So silver nitrate is extremely volatile, very flammable, to a point where it burns underwater. So it's very, very dangerous, and this is why they don't use it anymore. Yeah. But it's fucking whipping around. And then it bursts into flames. There's just fire everywhere. Super scary.
Uh-huh. So Montserrat is fighting off the dogs? Or...
Yeah, she fights off one of them.
And then she yells to...
They slit Jose's throat or something? But he survives.
He's not there, I don't think.
They cut him up, don't they?
That...
Who do they spill the blood of? I think it's him. Because they have... an entire dead body, which is Urueta. Or is it just they're draining him? But he doesn't have any blood left.
I don't know.
I think they do hurt Jose, but they don't kill him, obviously. Okay.
So Tristan is like communicating with Abel, like, tell me the runes so I can complete the spell, because the runes were kept a secret. Ewers wasn't letting any one of them know the entire spell, only pieces of it. And Abel is the only one who knows, and he's dead. And so he's using necromancy to get in touch with him. And he tells him, use your rune. And he's like, what rune? He's like, your rune. And then Montserrat yells it too, like, our runes. And he realizes what she means, which is just like, they had these little like rudimentary little kid drawings of themselves that they used as signatures on their notes back and forth to each other.
And they had a little private alphabet that they would make. Yeah.
And so he draws that on the floor instead. And that dispels Yours is magic entirely. And they're able
But then
to leave.
She gets like sucked into the scary darkness.
Oh, yeah. And he goes in after her.
Yeah. I actually really liked that part.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if I can pull that part up because I really liked that line. Kindle,
I love you.
Kindle, I love you. Doopy doop 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 doop. Oh, and I also really liked that last line too.
Really good. Kind of made me think of Cabin at the End of the World.
Yes, it did. It was similar. Let me see here. Doop-de-dee. Yeah, so first he's very scared and he's like, fuck, I'm scared. I don't want to go in. But then, and he's also like gonna burn if he goes in there, but he goes in and it says, even if the darkness never ended and swallowed him whole, he'd still run to her.
Whee!
That's so neat.
It's so sweet. And then so he like sweetie. Convinces her that he's in love with her in the end.
Oh my God. And when he calls her, when sweet. She, wait, silly tomato.
Yeah.
She that calls was so him cute.
Silly tomato. Cause she like is so.
She's so, yeah.
Bashful and taken aback by him when she finally like believes that he's serious and not just doing it for convenience. Yeah. I liked the two of them together. I liked their dynamic. I liked.
Me too.
I liked that they got together at the end.
Yeah. After he convinces her, like, no, I really do like love you and I want to be with you. And she's like, fuck. come on, dinner is on me, Tristan said, pointing at the vendor and slipping his hand in his jacket, looking for his wallet. This was life, they figured. Not a fabulous medley of spells, hexes, and intoxicating power, but the simple, ordinary assembly of sights and sound that were nevertheless a wonder. For they were viewing and listening to them together. She laced her hands with his, and they crossed the street in a hurry, laughing and telling the man to wait 1 second for them. Mm. And it's so, like, open for possibility. She does a really good job of ending stuff with the relationships where it's, like, so open for possibility.
Yeah, you just, like, beautiful. Feel everything, like the whole world stretching out in front of them.
Yeah.
Their lives together.
It's like, yeah, and it's there's something so beautiful about maybe kind of vibe where it's like, oh. Yeah, I did like this book.
I did. I just was like, wait, it just like the pacing was off.
Yeah,
the pacing. Well,
and it doesn't
off.
Help that her other books are so good.
Yeah, so well paced. Yeah. I have not felt that from one of her books before. Have we only read the two, or have we read three?
Mexican Gothic, Daughter of Dr. Moreau.
I guess it's just the two. I've just bought so many of her books at this point and haven't read them yet.
Hold on. I'm going to look here.
I own Velvet Was the Night.
I own Velvet Was the Night and Gods of Jade and Shadow.
Mm.
We should do Velvet Was the Night.
Yeah.
The Mayan God of Death sends a young woman on a harrowing, life-changing journey.
Heck yeah.
In this dark, one-of-a-kind fairy tale inspired by Mexican folklore. Like, in 1970s
she has written,
Mexico.
Nine books. That's wild.
Oh, also, I loved her characterization of Mexico City and having been there, but I obviously have not been there in the 90s when this is.
I've never been.
One of my favorite cities ever, ever, ever. I'm going again in January.
Yeah, and she clearly knows a lot about like Mexican cinema. That, or she's giving a really good impression of knowing about it, because how would I know that she's right? But it felt like she's really understood sound editing and Mexican
and the Mexican film industry
in the 90s. It just, she seems like such an expert in everything she's talking about.
I Man, because I do a lot of sound editing and sound design and stuff like that. I cannot imagine doing it in the 90s. Like, the idea of not...
Like, the tedium of it? Or the difficulty?
Yeah, and, like, even knowing about, like, tape and shit, I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
How do you do that? Because, like, everything I do, right, is, like, I'll select something and, like something as simple, right, as, like cleaning up, like, doing an EQ sweep on sound to make it sound better, right? Uh-huh. Make it roomier, make it less roomy, make it closer, make it more transparent, whatever. Like, you can, you know, look at a wave file and kind of adjust, you know, your bass and your treble and everything like that and kind of reform the wave form. How would one do that with a piece of tape? I have no idea.
Do not know.
I have no idea. So I was just like, oh my God, I could not even imagine.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I would like recommend this, but with the caveat that like there are things I didn't love about it.
Yeah, same.
But that it's a really solid story.
It is. And it didn't, you know, I still like, she's still one of my favorite authors and I'm.
Yeah. And she like is so good at jumping around to different subgenres within horror.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. She's really good at
maintaining
her
voice. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Her voice changes and yet is still her.
Mm-hmm.
That's very impressive.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, we've already, I guess Velvet Was the Night is also noir.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's
like
more explicitly noir.
Yeah. This one is like.
It follows the arc of a noir without fully
with
being
like
noir.
Weird,
you know,
esoteric
what? Oh,
magic.
That's what I wanted to say. This is like a really, this is like a long episode of Losa Spookies.
Oh my, you know what? It did kind of have that feel to it. It did. I love Losa Spookies.
I do too.
So
like one of my favorite shows in recent years.
Yeah, same. It's so good.
Yeah, I don't think we've talked about that, about Losa Spookies on the podcast
That's
before,
so good.
But it's so good. And this is like an episode of Losa Spookies with all mm-hmm. of the like
references to horror within the horror piece itself.
Yeah, it's like Mexico and kind of a 90s feel and like a like a little bit of a pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, but also yes, magic is real thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 So that was fun about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a good one. Yeah, read it. But yeah, like Lindsay said, caveat.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you to our Patreon supporters. If you'd like to become one, go to patreon.com/teencreeps. We have a lot of extra episodes for you there as a thank you. And thank you to our Patreon producers who give it the $15 a month level. Thank you, Adam Halwitz.
Amanda K.
Amy T.
Anne Dwyer.
Caitlin L.
Carrie H.
Courtney McPhail.
Danielle Lamana.
Drew Waranis.
Ellie Lagos.
Elizabeth E.
Emma M.
Erica T.
Aaron B.
Gabriella Santiago.
Gwendolyn Ludovic.
Hannah L.
Jeremy Kronk.
Jeremy Goodfellow and Marco Pavlicic.
Jesse T.
Jessica Smith Harper.
Jessica U.
Jonathan Venable.
Kat Miller.
Keith Anderson.
Kelly Burns.
Carrie N.
Cody X. Eagle.
Landry Desmond.
Larry Nguyen.
Laura Hooper.
Maddie M.
Megan Lozier.
Melody.
Micah Eunice.
Miguel Camacho.
Molly G.
Molly Marks.
Noah Spargo.
Rachel C.
Randy Klett.
Rebecca Goss.
Robert F.
Rogue Kalihua.
Sarah Wallen.
Sasha Gibson.
Sylvie T.
Victoria Beck.
And Whitney E.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. And thank you to all of our listeners. There was some like way to support us I was going to suggest, and now I've totally forgotten.
You had a new idea?
Yeah.
Send money to our P.O. box.
Oh, that was it. Give me yet more money for the podcast. I truly forget. That's so weird. Anyway, what a point. I shouldn't have even mentioned it.
Mm.
Whatever. Tell a friend about us.
Yeah.
Follow us on Blue Sky.
On stuff. Oh, yeah.
Follow us on Blue Sky and Threads
on like the deadest fucking social media app. Blue Sky.
God.
Sorry, shit is not popping over there.
It's not popping, but it is better. It's a better vibe.
Is it? I mean, I also, I've muted so many accounts on
Instagram.
Yeah. I don't need people to, the same people to follow me on Instagram and
Yeah, it should be two different things. Threads. But that we're just posting the same thing as the podcast everywhere.
Yeah.
But it's because it's promotion. But obviously Twitter is dying and being led by a racist, anti-Semitic dummy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not great. RIP Twitter. I think it all needs to go, though.
I think all of it
needs sickness.
To go.
I think it's very bad for us all to know it's this much
about each other,
what's in our heads.
Yeah.
We should not have this many minds in our own mind.
No.
Anyway, thanks for listening. Until next time, keep it creepy.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Kelly Nugent, Lindsay Kaytai, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit ForeverDogPodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.